You are listening to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, a podcast where I interview guests about D&D, miniatures, wargaming, comic books, movies, game conventions, and other nerd-related paraphernalia. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast. Today we are fortunate enough to be joined by the elegant and fantastically creative Jen Page.
Hello!
Welcome to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, Jen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yes. First of all, I should mention, of course, I'm a fan, and I'm saying this for everyone also listening. Of course, we're big fans.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of us know you from Darkness Rising, Hands of Fate, and Journey Quest. But at Gen Con this year, you came decked out in your elf druid rogue garb.
Yeah, the Chaldea project.
Right. So I wanted to ask you about the Chaldea project.
That sounds completely ominous, doesn't it? The Chaldea project. I don't think that's the official title.
Yeah, because the first video is out and it's called War Room.
War Room, right. That is it's kind of a proof of concept short film. It is the brainchild of Peter Akison. And basically, it's based on a D&D campaign he's been running, gosh, I think for over 20 years. And it's so epic that he, being a recent graduate of film school and a budding filmmaker, he has enough knowledge to realize that there's no way we are ever going to film all of it, nor do we have the budget, even if we had the time. So it is a multimedia project that will be narrative, as in literature you can read online, online stories. It'll also be motion graphic comics with voiceover work. And interspersed within that will be some live action scenes. And I think as the fan base develops and the story continues, we'll pepper in more filming as it goes. I think they're going to keep it a little fluid. So I can't really tell you what the ratio is going to be, but it's definitely interesting because I'm a fan of graphic novels / comics, and to be able to be a part of this project and see it come to life is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And the first episode is really neat, and the graphic novel vibe is definitely there. It starts with it and ends with it, and then in the middle, like the important change of scene, like the oncoming war scene, that's live action. And so it's really neat. And I like how they put in the characters one at a time when they're in the effects. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. It kind of has that Wizard of Oz moment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. And then when you see the actors, and you're like, wow, it really did look like how it was drawn. And it's, you know, we use their voices and everything. And it's really neat how it just kind of blends together. And I think Peter had said at least once that his goal is that you're watching a motion graphic and you're immersed in that. And then you get so immersed when it switches over to film that you forget you're watching a motion graphic, and then vice versa when it switches back. It's like, wow, that was all over the place, but it worked because you don't get bumped, you know, it's not jarring at all.
Right.
And so that's really cool.
Yeah. And it has a prologue and an epilogue just to the episode. And when the people appear, you know that the granularity of the scene is something you're paying attention to. You're like invested.
Because I
think you can do so much information in a graphic novel setting at the beginning that you can just dive into it. It doesn't have to, you know, slowly build to what's going on in the world, because there's a whole world to explain before that first scene.
Right. And there's going to be orc armies and dragons and all kinds of, you know, demonic creatures. And it's just like, how do you get the budget for that? Well, we can certainly draw it, you know?
Right. That's kind of funny, because it also has this vibe of miniature wargaming in the first one, right? It's the whole thing is he's being presented with all these miniatures, which is, of course, very near and dear to my heart. But
So then you must know that who Duke Siegfried is with. He's like the father of miniature war gaming. He just has thousands and thousands of miniatures that he's created. And he is an actor in the war game, the short film that we've done as well. So, and I was just really surprised. He did such a good job acting, and multi-talented really nice guy.
Right. And that, yeah, and that's kind of, so a kind of a creative type, what I want to say. Well, like with your various projects, you have the photography projects you're doing, the fantasy artwork, and acting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain personality with someone that's a creator or a writer. They're definitely much more interesting to talk to than like a person that's only, you know, only has one skill, right? Mm-hmm. Someone who's always looking forward to diving into something else.
Yeah, it's probably something to do with borderline technically insane.
Yeah.
You always get a good conversation.
Right, right. So your character in that show is a elf,
yes,
druid rogue character,
yes,
archer?
Yes, Priyanka.
Mm-hmm.
And when Peter first approached me with that role, she was going to be strictly druid, but he knows that I really love to play rogue. So he's like, we can pepper that in there. And he was really flexible about it. We went back and forth with the background story. And from there, he actually gave me the opportunity to write her scenes and to write the backstory for her character. And that was really a fantastic opportunity because, you know, you take a role and you're like, oh, I hope it's good. And then when you have the opportunity to write the role, you're like, yeah,
yeah,
this is so amazing. So that happened.
Yeah.
A funny side story to that was, you know, I wrote the backstory and everything, and Peter is such a great guy. And he, as a director, he emailed me and he's like, how do you feel about nudity in acting? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not a prude about it, but it's not something that I really have ever done, nor do I feel the need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I can respect that. I can respect that. It's totally fine. Don't worry about it. And then I went and I wrote a scene where I'm completely naked. So he was like, Jen, what are you doing? I'm just that way. I contradict myself all the time. It must drive people crazy. I say it's the Aquarius in me.
Mm-hmm.
I just contradict myself all the time.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't imagine we will film that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do draw it, you know,
right,
I'll be shoulder to shoulder with what they're doing and saying, yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah. No.
So. Right. Well, that's the freedom of the graphic novel style you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
If something is incredibly impossible to do, like you want to write all sorts of amazing things, right? But when you're writing a movie or something, you're like, well, it all needs to take place in a building with a smoke machine and piping overhead. Like,
and we have one day to film.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what do we have? Don't write a scene on a boat, right? If you don't own a boat.
That's right.
But with a graphic novel setting, you can always switch into that. And then you can write whatever you want. And so nude scenes if you want, or giant explosions.
Right. And I have such a great working relationship with Peter that I know I can write that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he will work with me to make sure I'm happy with it when we do visually produce it, you know.
Sure.
And anyone else, if we hadn't worked together before, I would have been like, no, I don't think this is for me. Just because filmmaking, there's so much trust involved with it. You don't know what they're going to do with the footage. You don't know what the exact camera angle is. You don't know if it's going to be flattering. So for the most part, I've always just kind of been like, no, I'm good with that aspect of my career.
Sure.
Not being filmed.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a lot to have out there. You know, the film just...
Forever.
Right. Right, right. So with the costuming for Chaldea, mm-hmm. Now, did you design that costume as well?
I did help. I did some initial sketches, mm-hmm. and then I met with their two costume designers and their actual like physical costumer.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed all of it and we went back and forth and then we colored it and we picked different choices. And again, Peter being so great, he was like, if you want to build this, you can build this. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get out of the way and just let your costumers do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was available for fittings and input all the way. But for the most part, you know, after the initial design, you know, with the ability myself to draw, I was able to sketch out what I was thinking and get it out of my head, and then just say, you know, you go with this, make it cool. And of course they did. They did such an amazing job. It was great.
Yeah. It looks great. I bet that's pretty nice to go, here's what I'm kind of thinking, and then hand it off.
Yeah.
And not have to build it yourself.
I don't really ever get to do that much. So right. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. I know you already make a lot of costumes and for your photography shoots.
Yes.
Right. So you've got to have like a huge closet of stuff.
God, you wouldn't believe. And I actually try and pare it down every once in a while, you know, and then you fall into the trap of, oh, I'm going to need this someday, even though you've never used it and you've had it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to pare down on the storage bins. And every once in a while, I'll do like an eBay auction or something. Like I've auctioned off some Darkness Rising stuff and some Journey Quest stuff, because after a while, like, of course, there are token things that like I keep near and dear to my heart and would never get rid of, but there's so much of it that after a while it's like, you know, other people could really, really, really enjoy this, and in the meantime I just have it in storage, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So I try to open up my closet to the public sometimes.
Sure, because they're gonna appreciate that one prop more than your storage facility will.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
I'm sure you accumulate a lot of that stuff for the Journey Quest and Darkness Rising and Hands of Fate.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is every time I do something like that, like some Journey Quest stuff that I wore in like the first scenes, but not in the second scene, where there I had a costume change. And I have, for the most part, I have the majority of it. I think I auctioned off a necklace, you know, that I'm sure that's Queen Starling has other necklaces, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But people read into it and they're like, oh my gosh, does this spell the end for Journey Quest? I'm like, no, I'm not saying that at all.
or read like plot lines into it, right? Like, yeah. Oh, is she going to be killed off? Is this a Game of Thrones situation?
Right. Like I auctioned up some ties that I wore, that Penelope wore in Gamer's Hands of Fate. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, that hasn't. She has other ties, people. She has other ties.
Were they concerned about? Was like, she's not going to return.
Or just, oh, you know, is there not going to be a Gamers 4 and whatnot? Mm-hmm. And it's like, just don't know. No, this is me doing something. It's completely independent and not up to me, you know?
Right. I think people don't understand how much stuff is accumulated after a project like that.
Yeah. For the record, I have stuff.
Now, Journey Quest Season 2 and Hands of Fate were both... Mm-hmm. I don't know if Journey Quest was kickstarted, but I know Hands of Fate was.
Yeah. Season 2 was...
Of Journey Quest, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Season 3, it's looking like it'll probably be kickstarted as well.
I'm not sure. I kind of stay out of the business dealings with Dead Gentleman or Zoe. I help out when they ask me to, but I think it's the creative part of my brain that is just like, when anyone starts talking business or production planning or money and budgets, my brain just reflexively shuts off and leaves town. I just don't have a brain for that. And there's so many people who are capable of making those decisions and things like that. It's like, just call me when you need me.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that I love the Kickstarter setup for making movies like this, right? Because maybe they'll get looked over otherwise, but then in the Kickstarter, it's an obvious, you know, all these people donate money to make Hands of Fate. It was, you know, huge.
And
you realize, well, there's a giant market for this. And then you think, so Kickstarter is an interesting kind of band-aid for that. Like, why? Mm-hmm. But at some point, you know, production companies will fill that niche and take it back away from Kickstarter, you think.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows how long. Well, Kickstarter is kind of a sign of things to come when it comes to funding movies like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So... I want to ask you, okay, about another project that maybe you don't have any more information on, but I saw a hilarious trailer for a movie, kind of a tongue-in-cheek movie you were working on called Elf Slayer.
Yeah. That information would totally be mine because I wrote that trailer and filmed it in a weekend with some friends. That's all kind of my responsibility.
Right. And that trailer has so many horrible puns that are so delightful.
I know. We had so much fun. And like the kills that we do in that trailer, like catching the arrow and throwing it back and snapping the guy's neck, we figured that out. Like I knew we needed those things. They were placeholder. And then like we figured out the actual choreography while we were there. And yeah, just so much fun. So much fun. And like everyone's always like, she's not wearing a lot of clothes, going to Belle like that. It's like, that's the joke.
Right, like the whole
It's
thing is
everything. Right. And so to answer somewhat what you're asking, I have tons and tons of notes for Elf Slayer feature film. I'm sure we could break it down into a web series if we wanted to, but you know how sometimes when you see a trailer for a comedy and you get all disappointed when you see it because all the best bits were in the trailer. I don't want that to be Elf Slayer. It needs to be every single joke needs to be amazingly funny. And I'm constantly writing down things that pop in my head. And I've got a lot of the plot in place. But like that, taking the time to sit down and write it, I don't think I have that right now. But I mean, it's always a possibility. It's always a possibility. But yeah, as long as I'm still alive
Right. I mean,
and in a bikini.
I can understand because that trailer was so funny that you don't
Thank you.
always going undergoing analysis paralysis, right? Trying to write anymore. You don't, there's so much promise in that
I know, and I don't want to disappoint. I really don't. And I love fantasy so much, and I love comedy, and I love to laugh so much that I wouldn't want to disappoint anyone with mediocre comedy. I want it to be perfect. Yeah, it's kind of a baby. It's my baby. It's a project. Someday, I just gotta write it all down. More so than just notes. That's another thing. I know the budget isn't going to be easy on that one, and so it's intimidating. It's intimidating where I can write something that is a two-person, one-location scene and make a short film, and an Elf Slayer. So not that. We did film the trailer in a weekend, and it was a volunteer project. But I want to be able to pay people. I want to be able to have good special effects. I want all that on top of being amazingly funny. So it's just going to take a while. Don't want to rush it out the door.
No, absolutely. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's got such promise. The whole
Thank
Chronicles of
you.
the Slaying Elf saga. I mean,
You're right.
it's like,
So I don't know if you know this, but that came out of Monty Cook and I. We did the show Geek Seekers. And that was kind of like, we had decided, well, there might be some people watching the show who have no idea who I am or who Monty is because they're not gaming. And so we were like, well, how can we comedically introduce ourselves? So he was in a game design lab, and I'm like, well, let's do a fake trailer for a movie for me. And I'm like, what would I do? And then we kind of came up with Elf Slayer, and it just needed to happen. So I can totally see actually doing that movie.
Yeah, that's right. It was at the beginning of a episode of Geek Seekers. I
Yeah,
remember
the
that
first
now.
one.
But the trailer stands on its own. Absolutely.
It's kind of like when we first watched it, Monty was like, I kind of forgot I was watching Geek Seekers, which really isn't what we were trying to do. Yeah. So we pared it down. We pared it down for the episode of Geek Seekers. And then, like a year later, we released the full Elf Slayer trailer. But there was even an extended trailer from that could easily be the opening of the film. And all right, I can't give too much away, but it was really, really funny.
It's hard to believe how much funnier it could get, or how many more arrows, the Elf Slayer could catch and throw back. Oh man,
Yes,
it's
yes.
hilarious. just hyper-violent in a great sort of way.
Right. Like she's going to stab her enemies with a unicorn, you know? Stuff
Yeah.
like that.
Yeah. That's
It
great.
all needs to be like that.
Yeah, that is a tall order.
Right.
I'm sorry that you have that to have to live up to. Yeah,
challenge.
the challenge, yeah. Exactly. So with the Elf Slayer, with the costuming, now you're also doing fantasy photography, and I know you have a penchant for mermaids.
I do.
Yeah.
I keep wondering when that's going to go away, but it's like 2.5 years strong now. I'm just obsessed.
Yeah. And you're making fantasy art, and you have a Patreon.
I do. My Patreon account is patreon.com/thegenpage if anyone wants to go check it out. But I launched that, gosh, right before Gen Con, so probably end of July.
Right, it's only been like a month out for a month.
Yeah, about a month. And the idea behind it was is that I love doing fantasy photography and I love modeling because to me it's quicker. It's kind of quicker than doing straight out art. You know, I don't have to paint it. But yeah, I do make the costuming and everything and come up with the concepts. But I enjoy that process so much. And of course, there's Photoshop work involved if there's, you know, spells or lights or wizardry or anything like that that you just can't do it in real life. But I try to create as much as possible in the real world before we start photographing. And my partner in crime is Max Holacek, who is my photographer, and he also was the director for Geek Seekers. So we've been working together quite a while, and I'll just come up with a concept, and he helps me with locations and lighting and composition and all that, and we just riff off of each other. And when I just get an idea in my head, I just start building it a lot, and a lot of it is costuming. Like there's a piece, Queen of the Sea, that's on the front page of my Patreon, and I created the mermaid top, the tail, the crown, the trident, everything that she's wearing, and we just happened upon this location that had this amazing piece of driftwood that looked like a throne. And just that morning, Max was like, "We need something like a driftwood throne," and then we went scouting and we found it, and I'm like, "We need to shoot this now." So we did. And just, yeah. And why I started the Patreon was because I do all this on my own. I just can't stop, but I'm limited to my own budget. And, you know, I love sharing it with everyone who wants to see it. So it was like, you know what? If people could just contribute a little bit, I can do so much. And it's only been a month, but I really do feel the impact. And just mentally thinking of a concept and realizing I've got supporters that it's possible is just so exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, art is difficult and it takes time, and of course,
Yeah.
money is time. I love the idea of I love the Patreon and you know, creating art that otherwise wouldn't get made because, you know, not somebody's paying for it. You know, people kind of think of art a lot of times, like in the internet, art seems free, right, to some folks, but it takes a lot to create a song or yeah, do this kind of thing. So I love that it's there. We can kind of crowdsource it too, you know, and help it.
It's like I'll sell prints of my work, but that's not, I don't think that's sustainable. How many prints is one person gonna buy? You know what I mean? I have very few people who will buy whatever new offering I have. And one really cool thing that I would love to mention about Patreon was I had the idea to approach different fantasy companies. I think right now, well, game companies and geek-oriented companies, and say, "Hey, you know, you're familiar with my work. Will you corporate sponsor me?" And to my surprise, a lot of them have said yes. And how amazing is that? That in this day and age, what we know about consumerism or being a customer, to be able to approach a company as a single individual and say, hey, do you like my work? Will you support me? And have them say, you know what? Yeah, we will. And that to me, like, it's just, it blows my mind that it's even happened. But Gaming Paper is a supporter of my work. Gary Khan is a supporter of my work. Gamehole Khan, Chaldea, and Mayfair Games, and Monty Cook Games as well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think about that. It's like, wow, you know, we all spend our monies as customers, and to be able to turn around and, you know, we have a lot of choices out there. And it's like, in these companies like this, these are the companies that, if it's between them and the other guy, think about just how amazing they have been, just to be able to listen to an individual and support their work. I can't thank them enough.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I saw the, for Gary Khan, I think they, sponsored a particular dress.
Yeah. My flower dress.
Yeah. And it just looks awesome. And then it's like, hey, it's sponsored by Gary Khan. And I'm just like, that is great. I love Gary Khan. Right. So it already,
And, I know.
Yeah.
It's just so, I have no words for it. A company would be like, you know what? You go, girl. You do this thing. We are happy to have your back. It's just amazing. It's just so amazing to me.
Yeah, that is great. And speaking of Gamehole Con, that's coming up, and you're heading out to it.
I am. It's November. Was it November 6th?
Yep, November 6th, 7th, and 8th. That weekend, Friday through Sunday.
Yep, I got my airfare all set.
Yeah,
and I think I don't know when this podcast is airing, but I think their event registration, their event, what
September
people
5th.
Are registering.
Yeah,
that's coming up really, really quick.
Yep. Gonna try to go ahead and put this at the same time, to be honest with you.
Sweet.
Yeah. September 5th is the event registration for General Gaming for Gamehole Con, and it's going to be huge this year. They're moved to a larger location. The last 2 years have been incredible. And I love Gen Con, but there was something when I went to Gamehole Con and just, you know, ran into Ernie Gygax. That's that's neat, right? And that's...
It's totally neat.
And you can just talk to these guys and they just won a game. And they just happen to all live in Wisconsin. So,
right.
Or around it.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, such a good vibe at Gamehole Con. Just really genuine, really care about, you know, the gaming experience. And I am super happy to be a guest again this year. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Now, when you were a guest before, I know you ran a Call of Cthulhu game because...
I did.
I went insane in it. So thank you
Everybody
for that.
Did.
Yeah. You don't pull punches, that's for sure. Are you thinking of running a game this year, or are you going as a, are you just going to play games?
I am looking into, playing games this year. I did tell Gamehole Con that if I was struck by inspiration, to design a new game, there's no resisting that. But so far I've just been so busy with things that I haven't been able to get the right inspiration to write, because I'm not just running a game. I like the campaign that you played in with me. Like, I wrote that, and that's the kind of, then I know it inside and out. It's all in my head, and it's a great game mastering experience when I can do that. But if I can't do that, I enjoy playing so much. It's like there's no love lost there. Like, if I can be in a game and just enjoy being a player, that's an amazing experience too.
Right. And I know how long it probably takes to write a game, because you didn't just write a game. You had like props and stuff.
Yeah. For us,
so you'd have to create all those. I know. I know. Probably.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
And I still mean to write that module down and have it out there so that people can play it too. And gosh, that was 2 years ago and I still haven't done that.
Right. Just,
yeah. That's how far away Elfslayer is, people. I haven't written this module down. But I did run that same campaign at Gen Con this year with a contest that had Off female GMs, and I was like, I can GM. And so I ran it again there. And that was a lot of fun to kind of relive that campaign again.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
I didn't cry. I didn't cry at this game, though. Like, I cried at the other game. I mean, you know, in character.
Right. Acting.
Cry out of frustration.
Right. 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 That's right. She ran out of the room, and then we knew something was up.
Yeah. No, there's no way you can catch her. So, I am the GM.
Moving along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's at this moment in the podcast where I'd like to do the Vorpal Chainsword Quiz Blast with you.
All right.
All right. It's going to be 7 questions.
Okay.
You just answer them as well as you can.
Okay.
And we'll see what score you get at the end.
Okay.
All right. So, question number 1. Better Mermaid, Ariel from The Little Mermaid, or Madison from Splash?
Madison. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah.
No, do not apologize, because that's the right answer.
Okay.
Daryl Hannah's right. Always the right answer. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, not to be confused with Splash 2, which was not as good, but still Madison.
Or the little known about TV series.
Oh, man. That is little known. I did not know about that.
Yeah. I think it was pulled pretty quickly.
Because really, where are you going with it? Is it just going to be an environmental? Anyways, okay, so moving on.
Exactly, moving on.
But one more side note. Splash 2 had that 80s, they spelled 2-T-O-O like also, which they did a lot in the 80s with sequels to movies like Teen Wolf 2. I don't know why that's so funny to me, but it's hilarious.
It is. It's kind of like putting a Z instead of an S. You know, right. Just stop.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to be too clever.
Right. All right,
question number 2.
Okay.
What would be more useful to have? Sweet bow staff skills, computer hacking skills, or some boss dance moves?
Oh, jeez. I'd probably go with computer hacking.
Yeah.
I'm not going to incriminate myself what I would do with those skills, but I think the world is better off me not having computer hacking skills.
Yeah, they're definitely the most useful skills, though.
Yes. Yeah, I would think so. But sweet boss moves.
Right, boss dance moves. I mean, obviously this is a Napoleon Dynamite related question, but it was important to get that sorted out. And computer hacking skills is correct. So that's 2 for 2.
Okay, sweet.
All right. Better smartphone platform, Android or Apple?
Oh.
This is where divisive on the internet.
I know the right answer is Android, but I own an Apple. So I have to say Apple. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm standing with you strong on this.
Really?
I agree. I had an Android for so long. But man, oh man, now I have an Apple. And as much as we want to hate Apple, it's just a better smartphone, right? It gets the job done. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love my phone. I love my phone. It does what it needs to do. It has an amazing camera. Really, yeah.
And the camera just opens when you tell it to open, and you can use it. You don't have to defragment the hard drive in your Apple.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Internet. I agree. You know.
We apologize.
Don't use your computer hacking skills. Just, it's true. All right. Question number 4. You, as Jen Page, are transported into a fantasy world. Where would you rather be sent? Into Tron's grid, into Atreyu's never-ending story, or into Luster's D&D realm?
Oh. Wait. Which part of never-ending story? When everything got better, or when everything was falling apart?
it's a roll of the dice, so to speak.
Okay. I'd go with never-ending story. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
Right. Because of luck dragons.
Yeah.
Right. If there's a chance to ride a luck dragon, I mean, it flies. So that's number one.
I so want a luck dragon. Maybe I can make that happen for Christmas. I don't know.
Yeah. Good luck.
Right. I know. It's like, sure, Jen. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's correct, because Tron's grid, as awesome as the grid is in Tron, It's so dangerous. And so is Luster's D&D realm. That gamer's D&D realm is just hyper dangerous. So never ending story. The worst that happens to you is you turn into nothing, which, you know, is unpleasant. But,
but it's uplifting, you know? It's an uplifting never ending story.
All right. Which is the superior gaming system? D20 or percentile?
Oh, how could you do this to me?
Yeah. We ask the hard hitting questions.
I really love the percentage system because it's easy and I can concentrate on the game instead, but I do like rolling all the other dice in D20. All right. I'm gonna have to side with D20, but it's not easy. It's not easy at all.
No, it's not. And I really thought you were going to go with percentile, but D20 is the right answer.
Okay.
Percentile is just too hard to figure out how to level up.
Right.
You put a check mark next to it. I
guess when you're at 100%, you're done, but then you're not rolling for anything anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, I made it. I'm at 100%.
Right. Yeah, put a check mark next to antiquarian skill. I don't know what I'm going to do with that.
Right.
All right. Question number 6. Okay. You come across a mythical beast deep in the woods of the Pacific Northwest and are able to free it from a hunter's snare, forever earning its loyalty. Sweet. What is the creature you saved? A unicorn, a Pegasus, or a Bigfoot?
Oh, man. I thought you were going to have dragon in there for sure, because I was like, dragon.
That's more of a Southeast United States creature.
God, Monty Cook would say Bigfoot. That's all I have to say. But I would, though unicorns are pretty, pretty, pretty. I think I'd pick Pegasus because those can fly, yo.
Yes, that's it. It can fly. A unicorn might have some kind of horn power, but who cares? And Bigfoots just smell bad. So definitely Pegasus is the right answer. This is amazing. Okay, so 6 out of 6 so far. And I really have these marked down as the right answers, so
I trust you.
Doing quite well.
You wouldn't lie about no unicorn.
Right. Yeah. Well, I want to save a unicorn. Maybe it's horn heels. Who knows?
Right. It gets rid of poison, right?
But yeah. But for sure, a Pegasus wings allow it to fly. We all know that. So
definitely.
Okay. Finally, question number 7. Other than Darkness Rising and Hands of Fate, what is the best D&D related film?
Besides Mazes and Monsters, D&D related. So it has to be something like The Gamers, right? Or Knights of Badassdom. It couldn't be something like, you couldn't argue that Lord of the Rings was D&D related.
You know what? Let's put Lord of the Rings and Conan the Barbarian movies on the side burner for this question, because those are fantastic movies, but...
Okay.
But I would say sword and sorcery movies of any kind that came out in the 80s do count.
Like Beastmaster?
Yes. Yes, like Beastmaster. Though not Beastmaster 2, no. Portal Through Time.
2. You can see I'm stalling because I'm like racking my brain.
I have a number of choices here that could be right answers.
Okay. All right, I just saw one recently that I really liked and I'm completely drawing a blank. Unicorn City is really funny. You know what? I would say Role Models.
Oh my God, Role Models.
Did you forget about Role Models, dude?
I did, and to my everlasting shame, because how much did you want to play Lair with Paul Rudd after Role Models?
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's such a good film. And, like, it was kind of a quiet hit, you know? People don't talk about that film, but Role Models is hilarious.
Makes me want to drink Minotaur.
Okay, so, yeah. I saw a Red Bull truck today, and I immediately thought of that movie.
It was actually Willow, Deathstalker, or Beastmaster.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Oh, Willow, such a good film. I gotta see that again.
Yeah. Willow is great.
It's been years and years.
And you did amazing on the quiz blast. I have to say, I don't think anyone else has gotten 100%.
Oh, talk about being transported in the world, a labyrinth. Oh my God, I'd so be there.
Oh yeah. Now, didn't up in your neck of the woods, isn't there now a Labyrinth themed art show going on?
A gallery, it's actually in Portland, just opened up, called the Fernie Bray, mm-hmm. which is really hard to try and guess how to spell. It's F-E-R-N-E, maybe I-E? Yeah, I-E, B-R-A-E. And I drove down there specifically this weekend to go because all of the Frouds were there, Brian and Wendy and their son Toby. And I got to meet all of them. And oh my gosh, boy, did I have to roll to not fangirl out all over the place. It was mm-hmm. amazing. And I don't know if you saw, but I got that picture with Toby where I'm trying to drag him back to the Labyrinth. He was such right. a good sport. He really got into it. And I'm like, wow, that's really amazing. And I'm apologizing publicly now if now till the end of time, that's all people want to do with him is take a picture, trying to drag him off.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's probably used to kidnap attempts. It's been happening since he was a baby.
Yes.
Since he was the baby in Labyrinth. Uh-huh. Right.
Right, in Labyrinth. And since that happened, I kid you not, I have half a script for Labyrinth 2 in my head. I just can't get it out of my head. Like, what would I do? How would I write that movie? And it's nearly getting to the point where I think I have to write it down.
Yeah. Have you been watching? So you're on a full on Labyrinth fix.
I'm probably going to watch it this week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And all there's so many funny parts in that movie.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. When they, I mean, even at the beginning when they're like going to go left or right, he's like, good thing she didn't go that way. Uh-huh. That goes straight to the Goblin City. Yeah,
yeah. Straight to the castle. When I worked at Wizards of the Coast, me and my team, I worked for the new media team. We were in our own built out little room and we were like, what should we call it? What should we call it? And I was like, the Oubliette. And so I worked in the Oubliette for like years and years. And I'm an honorary member of the Oubliette. So, yeah, I don't know that. Yeah,
that's awesome.
To be able to meet the Frouds, I told Brian Froud and Wendy this weekend, it's like their work is so enchanting and has done nothing but influence my entire life, I think. And there's very few things that you can say that. It's just so amazing. It's just so charming and so enchanting and so magical.
Yeah.
And to meet them, it was just, I still can't believe it really happened. And I'm still fangirling over.
And they're still making like the puppetry and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
Toby just had a short film come out called Lessons Learned. Right. And very amazing, you know, with Jim Henson Studios. And mm-hmm. yeah, so it's still going on. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Rewatching the video of David Bowie dancing around all the time with the, and he's like tossing the baby.
Yeah.
Brian, I guess, up and down, like super high and to the pup, to the goblins.
Yeah.
You know, it really just points out how poor of a guardian he would have ended up being.
It's very true.
But, oh man, Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
That is an excellent film.
Yes.
Or iconic film, at the very least. From.
Yes, very much so. They don't make very many films that are just that enchanting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, other than Neverending Story, which doesn't actually mm-hmm. come close, something about the puppetry in that movie. Mm-hmm. Was there another one that was similar or made with
There's The Dark Crystal.
Of course, Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
In fact, his gig. Yeah.
And
the Skeksis. Oh my God, Nightmare Attack. So, just had a vision of Skeksis and their beetle creatures.
Uh-huh. I cosplayed Kara, the Gelfling from The Dark Crystal, because my whole life, people have been asking me if I've seen that movie because I remind them of the Gelfling Kara. Mm-hmm. And it's not so bad anymore because I used to have I used to wear my hair long and straight and blonde with bangs. And since I don't do that so much anymore, it's a little bit better. But yeah, every once in a while still. I get, you know, this pause and a, have you ever seen The Dark Crystal? I went, yes.
Right. And then a reference to Wings, and then a reference to Fizzkid.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, but, I mean, in all honesty, I think people just want to talk about The Dark Crystal.
Oh, so yeah. Who wouldn't want to? Another amazing film.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Dark Crystal and Labyrinth were the two primarily puppet films. There wasn't a single human in Dark Crystal, though.
Right.
It was, but still puppets. Good. Yeah. All puppets and armadillo guys.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the podcast, Jen. I appreciate your time. And I look forward to seeing you at GameholeCon this year.
November. Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.